Hello and welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2002 once again lost to the LA Lakers in the postseason as a member of the Portland Trail Blazers to lose a first round series, going down 3-0 with a 92-91 loss back when series were only best of five. Rasheed in this game, as he typically does for the Blazers in losses to the Lakers, was the leading scorer, 20 points, 12 boards, 3 assists, but did not get a whole lot of help from the likes of Damon Stoudemire, Dale Davis, Reuben Patterson, Chris Dudley, Sean Kemp. Not the best for this Blazers team. Katie, to peek behind the curtain, this is the second time we've recorded this episode. We recorded an episode yesterday, but my audio was a mess because my computer was having a tantrum. It seems to be fixed now, which is great. On yesterday's show, we pulled a date from April 27th in Rasheed lore, and it was also a series-ending loss to the Los Angeles Lakers from like 7 years before. And this is now like, I think, 3 or 4 straight weeks where we've come up with a Rasheed loss to the Lakers as the anniversary where he was the leading scorer. Definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. I'm just glad Rasheed got out of the Blazers, I think, and kind of got to refresh and take on the Lakers anew with the Detroit Pistons deeper in the postseason. What are we talking about in terms of Sheed's career, if not for the goddamn Lakers, Katie? Like, are we talking about like a Kevin Garnett level career here, top 15 player of all time? I feel so badly for these first round losses that Rasheed very clearly was not like the biggest problem for. He just happened to be saddled with a bunch of old guys who just weren't quite ready to take on the goddamn Shaq and Kobe Lakers.
Wait, was this the same? This wasn't the same season. No,
the one we did from yesterday was 1997, the first Kobe Shaq season, I believe. This is from 2002, so 5 years later, but still the same results.
But like, I'm sure a lot of different stuff happened between in those 5 years, Sean.
Yeah, the Blazers. Let me just pull up the Blazers playoff history. They lost to the Lakers a whole lot. So if you go back. Thank you, Real GM. You go back to 97. They lose to the Lakers in the first round. They lose to the Lakers in the first round in 1997-98 as well. Then they lose to the Lakers in 2000-2001. And then they lose to the Lakers in 2001-2002. So yeah, 4 different first round losses to the Lakers. And then you have the loss in 1999-2000 in the conference finals, also to the Lakers. The Lakers got their goat, man. It was very difficult sledding here for Rasheed Wallace's Lakers. 5 different losses to LA in the playoffs over the course of 6 seasons. So, yeah, we're going to be running into these anniversaries a lot this time of year, sadly. It's just the way of the world, I suppose. So back to my original question, like, what are we talking about in terms of Sheed's career if not for the Lakers just standing in his way?
Probably more playoff appearances, right? You can always play this game of what ifs. You can do it with the Raptors and LeBron era Cavs, you know? There's a lot of like dynastic strangleholds on the NBA that I'm sure players, actually, I think NBA players and athletes in general do best to put that out of their head, or else you would just like, I would dwell on it. You can't think about it at all, because if you do, you will dwell on it forever. So I feel like because Rasheed doesn't think about this kind of stuff, we should neither.
That's fair. And look, I do think ultimately the way we talk about a lot of these players in terms of like their arcs, we've talked about this before on this very podcast, even in recent times, the failures and the disappointments on the road to an eventual championship win are, kind of what all informs the joy that you release when you win that title. So I think the 2003-04 title for Rasheed and the Pistons is not nearly as satisfying if it doesn't come at the heels of Rasheed losing to the Lakers so many times with another team, going to a team that can better take them on and vanquishing them. Also of note here, not an anniversary for today, but it is relevant, I suppose, to our particular interests. Rasheed was also part of the last team that almost came back and won a series after falling down 3-0. One of the, I think, only three teams that have ever, or two teams ever, that have forced a game seven after falling down 3-0. They fell down 3-0 to the Mavericks in 2002-2003, won three straight, lost game seven, sadly. But that is what we're looking at here. Is sort of the Raptors now take on the Sixers tonight and hoping to force a game seven. They can be the first since Sheed to pull off the feat. Isn't that cool?
You just jinxed it. But that's cool.
Katie, I guess we don't really need to go through the whole rigmarole of how your week was. We've talked about how our weeks were. So I'll ask you instead, how was your last 24 hours since last we spoke?
It was good. I mean, to be fair, the people don't know how my week was. Just you do.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. I'm trying not to rehash the exact same podcast we did yesterday. I think that's going to be in my head all throughout today. I might come up with some wild takes I don't even believe just because they're different than what I had yesterday.
Mm-hmm. My last 24 hours were good. I had a great interview. I'm not going to say with who, but it was phenomenal after we recorded. I ate... I went for a swim. I ate carbonara, which is one of my... faves. Watched a little bit of Selling Sunset, which you and I talked about before we started recording. It was pretty chill. I wanted to kind of have a busy work day, but I wanted to have sort of a chill evening going into what is also a jam-packed work day, but then a late night with the game tonight.
Yeah, I would like to thank the NBA for offering up a night where I didn't feel bad about not watching playoff games because, you know, sadly the Bulls go out to the Milwaukee Bucks. I think that was kind of expected in game five. And then the Warriors also take down the Nuggets in what was a very good game that I didn't watch. I just kind of caught highlights and I caught Nikola Jokic's high praise of one Draymond Green after the game last night. So that was cool. But yeah, I took the opportunity to just chill, watch some rich people try to sell houses and have messy personal lives as well. And, get juiced up for game six tonight, which is going to be wild. It's also kind of a loaded night in terms of like high drama in the NBA, like complete opposite to last night where you get the Mavericks and Jazz, the potential Jazz funeral. You've got the Suns and Pelicans, the Pelicans trying to force a game seven as well. Love a good game six, Katie. What is your favorite game in a playoff series? Let me ask you this question. This was not on yesterday's podcast. I'm just coming up with it right now, baby. I won't keep referencing the dead podcast that will not see the light of day for the rest of the show, I promise. But what's your favorite game in a playoff series?
I don't think I have one. I don't think I have one until it happens, I guess. You know, I'm not like, oh, yeah, game three, those are always crazy. I don't think that's true.
Right.
I guess I like a game one just because, you know, sets the tone. You get to see what this is all going to be about. But otherwise, some game six and seven suck. Some game two and threes rule, you know, and vice versa. So I can't say I have a hard and fast fave.
That's fair. I think seven is a kind of like the easy choice just because it's usually chaos and it's, you know, kind of you've gotten to the end of the series. Everybody knows what they're dealing with on the other side and is kind of just like who's less scared in a lot of cases. Whereas, you know, I really like a game five in a 2-2 series is always pretty awesome as well, right? Like you get the sort of pivot of where things are going. I like a good game three in a 1-1 series or a 2-0 series because it, you know, hey, are we actually going to have a series here or is it going to be a sweep or you know, a gentleman's sweep or something like that? I got to say, game six at 3-2 going back to the home arena is also a pretty damn fun time. And that's the case we have for all three of the series tonight, which is very exciting stuff. Also exciting, Katie, is that the Brooklyn Nets are no longer in the NBA playoffs. We don't have to talk about them anymore, but we will talk about them today as they lost to the Celtics earlier this week. They are now gone and out of our minds for the next at least couple months until the offseason comes into play. But we're going to talk about the Nets and their demise and the sort of concept of super teams, whether it's even a stable team building concept in today's NBA. We'll talk about also the guys who kind of get caught in the crossfire when super teams are doomed. This also applies to the Lakers. This applies to the Spurs. This has applied to lots of highly touted teams in recent seasons. I do kind of want to dig into the plight of those types of guys who are clearly not responsible for the failure of a team. You know, that's not that really can't really hang it all on them, but they often do get sort of shuffled around on the whims of the stars. So we'll talk about that. And then to close out today's show, Katie, we are going to dig into a little game called Guy, 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 or Gee. And that is all based on a wonderful piece you wrote earlier this week over at Dime. We won't explain anything more as to what's all going on there, but we will attempt to classify players under those four categories and explain what those categories mean a little bit later on. So let's go and start the show, Katie. Let's dive in. We're going to talk Nets, and we're going to talk about super teams and say farewell to Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, and the crew. That's all coming up in just 1 second. All right, Katie, it's the thing we're talking about this week, and that thing is the Brooklyn Nets, who are no longer with us. They have been dispatched by the Boston Celtics summarily in four games. Seemed like we might have a really good series after that awesome game one, and then it all kind of fell off the rails from there. The Celtics are just a really good team, and I'm living in constant fear that they're going to win the NBA championship right now, Katie. We got news today that Chris Middleton's going to miss the second round against the Celtics. That seems like a problem if you're Milwaukee, and before we get to this, to the Nets side of things here, I do have to ask you, like, we've talked about the Celtics quite a bit. I think most people have, a healthy disdain for the city of Boston and the Celtics as a whole. That said, this Celtics team kind of has some likable qualities, which is kind of throwing me for a loop personally. Where are you right now in terms of level of despair at the thought of the Celtics potentially winning the NBA championship? Do you think they should be kind of considered at least like co-favorites right now with, you know, the Suns or the Warriors? Where are you at with the Celtics? Is there like a sense of creeping dread coming into you over the possibility of them winning the championship this year?
Oh, no, I don't hate the Celtics, but I also don't think they're going to win the title. And I don't know how this, I think there's a lot of recency here, but people love that in the playoffs. And I think it's fun and oftentimes funny to watch because it'll just be a different team in a week.
Yeah.
I could also eat my words, which is fine too. I have no qualms with that.
It is tough to evaluate because the Brooklyn Nets, Katie, were not really a basketball team as much as they were sort of like a collection of guys who all stood in the same 94-foot sort of...
Interesting. You just ripped off directly a thing I said yesterday.
Wait, what did you say?
I said the Nets are not a basketball team, but a collection of individuals.
Oh, well, my bad. I guess I had that subconsciously embedded into my brain for some reason. I did not know or recall that you had said those words. But either way, let's get on to that point, Katie. Let's get to the Nets and the collection of individuals that apparently I'm just ripping takes about. I'll give you the floor here. Thoughts on the Nets' departure and the sort of, honestly, like, it felt like a sham of a team by the end. And yes, like, all of the big afternoon NBA shows and NBA on TNT have to talk about how the Nets are, you know, this special team of special boys who are going to go win the title because of all the talent they have. I never really saw that because you kind of have to be a team to win a championship in the NBA. I think that's been proven quite a bit over the years. So I don't know. Did you think they had the juice to do something? Or does this feel like a disappointment to you? Or did they kind of get their just desserts for being such a clown show all year?
I think they never really took off. I think I was sort of waiting for the spark that seemed to inevitably have to be there in the sense when you have that much talent kind of collected, because you do, like, I don't think Kevin, like, you know, there's a lot of discussion now of, like, how good actually is Kevin Durant. Like, he's still extremely good. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And, like, the same with Kyrie Irving. Like, they're still really good basketball players. They're incredible. Best in, like, Kevin Durant, certainly, like, top three in the league. And, like, you know, across all sports, just like top tier athletes. But yeah, like something didn't click. And I think, you know, you can't have superstars only running your team at this point, I guess. Like, you need the support and cohesion of a full and like fulsome locker room. Whether you want to call that chemistry, you know, like connectivity, like that's the stuff that helps you win. Like even get through one round of the playoffs, but certainly go on to win a title. You need everybody on the same page. You need everybody working together. And again, to go back to my original point, the team is a collection of like individuals. And I'll say castaways, but I don't mean that in a sense of like, these are athletes that other teams didn't want. It's like, you know, you think of like Blake Griffin or Patty Mills, Goran Dragic, like these are players who are still very good. But are still so individualized in terms of where they fit. And it doesn't seem like, whether it's like, you know, Steve Nash and his coaching staff, or maybe even the Nets front office, had a clear sense of how they would fit, only that they would inevitably fit once you got them all in the same room together, which isn't what happened. So it's an interesting like anti-hypothesis for team building, basically. Because it didn't work. And I'm really curious about what it sort of says for super teams down the road, because this was also the first, one of the first in this era of guys, a word I'm trying not to use because I know we're going to use it a lot later.
yeah, I've got the Thesaurus app up right now.
Era and caliber of superstar, exercising autonomy to say, we're not going to wait for a front office to build a super team. Like, we're going to pick a destination and we're going to make this our own super team. As Durant did with Kyrie and James Harden. And like, I think, you know, James Harden leaving obviously threw a wrench in that. He didn't stick around for very long at all. But it didn't work, or like it has not worked yet. So that's interesting to me too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that the NBA is kind of known for is being like a copycat league, right? And like, if a thing works, everyone's going to try to replicate that. And look, it's not easy to replicate luring two superstars to your city and signing into cap space, right? Like, that's not like a easily replicable model that other teams can follow. There's maybe like three other teams that could even entertain that. But I do wonder if this does kind of maybe push the needle back away from, you know, okay, well, if we get three superstars, we're set. Whereas maybe two superstars and like capable, competent role players around them maybe becomes more the sort of ideal. And honestly, I think like the Clippers kind of feel like they're going to try to make this work next year. They've been so just battered by injuries since they got Kawhi and Paul George that we haven't really gotten to see it. But I kind of have an inkling that it's going to prove to be the more effective team building model. There's maybe like less insurance if one of your guys gets hurt or goes on the lam for a sec. But I do think like you're going to build yourself a team that actually just kind of has the juice to, you know, sustain over the course of a full season, as opposed to just kind of having these flourishes of, wow, can you believe Harden and Durant and Kyrie and what they're doing on the floor together for these 13 games they've shared the floor with one another? Like, that feels like you probably don't need to have that peak to win an NBA championship in this era, where stars are a little bit more spread out. There's less of a clear, defined boogeyman who, you know, oh, well, everyone's got to load up to beat the Warriors or whatever it might be. And maybe just sort of a competent team building process is what you want. Like, I'm looking right now, Katie, at the Nets roster from a game from the beginning of the 2021-22 season before the James Harden trade. You've got Jared Allen, your boy. You've got Bruce Brown. You've got Tyler Johnson. You've got Landry Shamet. You've got Jeff Green, Torian Prince, DeAndre Jordan, who we know how that ended, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, and Timothée Luwawu-Cabarro, who actually had a pretty nice season wherever he's playing. Where is he playing right now? He's playing for the Hawks, I think, and he's not bad. Like, that roster, plus Kyrie and KD, who did not play in this specific box score I'm looking at, but obviously they were on the team and continued to be on the team to today. Like, Do you think if you gave Sean Marks truth serum, he would just rather keep that team together as opposed to doing all of the maneuvering he did to ultimately end up with Ben Simmons and Seth Curry and Andre Drummond kind of complementing his two stars? Obviously, like, the Joe Harris injury hurt them this year. And, you know, they kind of had a little too much like for like with like Patty Mills and Seth Curry both kind of being the same type of player. And maybe that's not what you need. And two types of guys like that on this team, types of fellas. Sorry, I'm going to use the thesaurus there. But like, truth serum, Sean Marks gets to turn back the clock 18 months and just go into last year's postseason and this year's postseason with KD, Kyrie, and the guys he had on hand. Like, I feel like he's probably just not doing anything, right?
Maybe. Like, if he wasn't enamored or pressured into the Harden trade.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I mean, there's always the I don't want to call it a danger, but the reality, maybe is a better way to put it, because it is what happened, of the team being still sort of being run by Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who it turned out that, like, neither of them was really that interested in that role and responsibility. Kyrie, like, granted, because he was away from the team so much, but also Kyrie, because I question whether he just wants to play basketball anymore. I don't mean that in like he's washed. I just literally think his interests lie elsewhere. It's like when you're phoning it in at a job that you're like, have been subconsciously or very consciously thinking about leaving for a while. Like, you know, when you're kind of just fooling yourself. And I guess I feel like that's what Kyrie's been doing for a couple seasons now. And Kevin Durant just, like, he just wants to show up and be excellent, you know, and like be phenomenal at the thing he's really, really good at. I don't want to blame Steve Nash, because he had like, what a wild season to just like be dropped on
just
your shoulders.
An impossible job. Yeah.
Yeah. in your first year of being a head coach. And like, this is with all the qualms, you know, I have with, why was he hired with like zero? That, what was his role with the Warriors? Like, more than, he was kind of just like an advisor, right? He didn't actually have a hand in like day to day coaching.
He was like a development coach. He was like, okay, Kevin Durant's like guy that he worked out with and warmed up with before games.
Okay, so fairly,
I think, kind
loose.
Of a similar like to Jamal McGlure with the Raptors. Uh-huh. I think if you're looking for like an in-house comparison.
Okay. So, yeah, I just, like, again, I don't think he was retrospectively, I don't think he was qualified to manage the kinds of personalities and, you know, clearly the stuff that the team got into. But that wouldn't change. I don't think that actually would have changed if you didn't have James Harden. You'd still have Kyrie and everything that happened with vaccines, like him not being vaccinated, not being able to be with the team. You know, like, that would have still happened, unless we're talking about like an alternate reality of the world. I think the Nets, to me, the Nets were broken. The Nets were broken after the season where they decided to give up Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. And that was like what got everything in motion, right? When it was seen that team, which was an exciting, really like pro development, but like those players had taken the development kind of all on themselves, and like could have been something in the long run team, was still just seen as a stopgap, right? Like, I don't think the front office saw that. They were just sort of like, here's what we're just going to put in front of everyone as an appetizer or like a sea warmer kind of, while we're gearing up for the main event, which is what the last couple seasons were supposed to be. So, that's when the Nets lost me.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe they get Ben Simmons back next year and he's like a nice fit and it all works and it's harmonious and everything like that. It feels like a lot to be banking on both Kyrie and Ben Simmons just like playing a full normal basketball season at this point. And I'm feeling like a little bit, I don't think Kevin Durant really gives a shit. Like, I mean, it's hard to sort of parse whether he does give a shit about what people think about his sort of like legacy and stuff. I kind of think he doesn't, but maybe there's some sort of level there where he is worried about it, and maybe his actions more sort of, you know, allude to that. But I just want Kevin Durant to be on a team that's normal, I think, is my thing here. And I don't know if that's possible with this current construct in Brooklyn and sort of all that they've kind of given up in terms of future assets and picks and young players and everything. Like, I don't know if it's salvageable around Kevin Durant right now, where he can just play a normal basketball season, not have to play 40 minutes a game to just keep the team afloat, and then just go into the playoffs and play normal playoff basketball. It just feels like there's just kind of this whole circus surrounding this team at all times now, and I find that to be a little disappointing. And it's not honestly dissimilar to the situation KD, or situation LeBron finds himself in LA, right? Like, these were the two Vegas favorites to win the title this year. And I do think it's kind of a big win for competent team construction that neither of those teams have made it past the first round. But at the same time, I'm sad that there's no KD and LeBron. Like, sort of back parts of their careers have been marred by just sort of chaos and drama more than just them playing cool basketball. Do you have any thoughts on that sort of a dynamic with LeBron and KD, like the two sort of, you know, dueling pillar stars of the league for 10 years there? You know, throw Steph in there too if you want, but they've kind of reached this sort of sad boy part of their careers. Maybe there's still, you know, another resurgence to come, and like the Nets still, I think, next year have a chance to win the title if things break all correctly. But it does feel like both guys are sort of hitched to wagons that have lots of wonky wheels, and maybe this is just the regular course of how things happen in the NBA, where things are cyclical and, you know, the new wave of stars is kind of taking hold of the league and has become the new sort of front facing collection of faces. But I, as someone who grew up, and this is sort of like my era of being a sentient basketball fan, I'm finding myself a little sad to see the sort of late stage of both KD and LeBron's careers. And look, KD is going to play for a long time. He's going to basically age like Dirk, I would assume, with his shooting. But it's a bit of a bummer to me that they find themselves into these predicaments where I don't really know if they're going to get out of it what they want. And certainly, like, fans who want to see them succeed are probably not going to get that either.
I'm still laughing at front-facing faces.
Look, I can only use the thesaurus for one thing, all right, Katie? I can't have dueling vocabulary change-ups going on over here. Bear with me.
I don't find it sad, especially because, again, I don't really think this is the end of these guys' careers, and I also don't think they're sort of looking at it that way. I think LeBron maybe is more, like, he's certainly concerned with legacy. We've talked about that before. It's interesting that you brought Steph Curry into it, because to me, those three, in terms of stardom, absolutely are parallel. But then when you look at the stability, like the relative stability Steph Curry's had with the Warriors, even when the Warriors were going through some of their most, like, destabilizing seasons, right? Like the last 2 years with Clay's injury, obviously, like, a lot of COVID, I think, like, you know, everyone, Draymond being hurt, like, people, everybody kind of being hurt and having no developmental pipeline, really. I know they're working on that now, because I think they're looking at, like, oh shit, like, what's the next iteration of this team? But that Steph doesn't have that kind of tinge that you're talking about of like a bummerness, you know, on his career. Like, I don't know if that's because he chose to stay with a team, whereas KD and LeBron really seem to revel in the musical chairs and the changeability and changing their situation and environment, and hoping that maybe clarifies things for them. Whereas Steph, I think, has always been pretty clear on what his goals were and who is the best, like, set of people to get him there again, right? To get him to another title. And I also think he just doesn't, I guess he is a little bit more demure, shall we say, than those other two. But, like, it's also interesting because, to me, LeBron and Kevin Durant have thrust themselves into the turmoil that they are currently experiencing. They were the active enablers of it, right? Yeah. Like, they weren't passive actors in the chaos that has befallen them. Like, LeBron James, probably most of anyone in the league, he built that team around them. He, like, very much handpicked that group of guys from this past season and then watch the whole thing just like go up in flames. And you can't feign like surprise at that. You know, like it was using a framework that's worked in the past, which is what we're also talking about with the Nets, this idea of like building a super team. Though LeBron's was like, I'm going to put guys around me that seem kind of weird and individual, but I know that they've worked in the past, right? And it's sure. just this kind of clinging to formulas that don't work anymore, and they don't really actually serve the current modern landscape of the NBA. But these guys haven't either rested with that reality or maybe can't, because they are, as you say, kind of a product of the NBA, like the change, like the changeover that's happening now, the changing of the guard, you know, in the NBA. It's interesting, but I think like super teams and the NBA is very cyclical. So I'm sure we'll see super teams again, especially when like, you know, like a Ja Morant is like, oh, I want that. Or even like a Darius Garland, Jared Allen, maybe the cool thing about that is we'll see super teams be in small markets because these guys won't want to actually leave. You know, maybe the Cavs, that young core are like, no, we think it's super cool what we're building here and it's working. So you got to come here. Like, we're not going to go to LA or we're not going to go to New York or Boston. You know, like we're going to bring a superstar here. Same with Ja Morant and that Memphis team, right? Like fairly complete, but would be really sick if they got another big star, especially like a star in their kind of generational era. To join them. So I think that would be like, that's really intriguing to me. Is that something that could potentially happen? Because you see that there is a market for it. There's like a desire for it. It doesn't just have to work in these huge markets. I think the upheaval in like, aside from Boston, like the two of the trifecta major markets this season has potentially been good for the league in that way, but all remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's cyclical, and at some point, some guy says, oh, I want to go to the Lakers now to play with Anthony Davis in 3 years, and then, oh, well, okay, we're back in the sort of, it's like the coastal the super team thing, and you just got to sort of live through that era, but also,
it's a rejection of the coastal elite.
I do think, though, that, like, we're seeing small market teams get wise as to what it kind of takes to not be a shit show and to keep guys around, and like, I think Milwaukee is sort of the first example of this, right? Like, I wouldn't say they built a super team, but they built a goddamn good championship level team around Giannis and kept him around as a result. And I wonder if, you know, the sort of blueprint that we're seeing in Memphis and, you know, Toronto's been a place where, you know, not a small market, but certainly not a glamour destination or anything like that. You know, the Spurs obviously had their run of being really competent and successful, and they're still doing it just with less talent on the roster. I do wonder if maybe guys start like looking at the shit show that is playing in New York or Brooklyn. And yes, like you get all the plaudits and the praise when things go well, but also when things go poorly, you're getting talked about incessantly on every single show that exists. And maybe it's not worth all that like headache. And maybe you want to go to a place where you'll be a little bit more appreciated just because you exist in that market where they don't really have that type of star power walk through all that often. I hope there is sort of a change happening here and maybe a realization that, you know, you can succeed and be very good and potentially build some kind of super team in a non-traditional market. And you have all of the success and wealth and, you know, glory that you can get playing in one of the major elite markets, but also without the headaches. So that's interesting. Let me ask you this, Katie. Kevin Durant and LeBron James, both free agents after next season. What if both of them decided to team up as role players, joining one of these Memphis-type teams, just going to hang out, making the mid-level exception, making like 10, 15 million bucks each, and then just going to be role players around Ja Morant's orbit? I think this is the way that we sort of bring joy to the back part of their careers back. You know, just sort of LeBron and KD as you're starting 3 and 4, knocking down shots. Old man LeBron working in the post with Ja Morant flying around. It doesn't have to be the Grizzlies. There's lots of other fun, cool teams. Maybe it's the Pelicans. I don't know. But what do you think of the idea of them sort of adopting a role player mentality beyond their next contracts and just going to win titles as like the greatest third and fourth options you've ever seen?
Well, LeBron does have time to kill. So if he wants to stay in the league until Bronny arrives, and he said, you know, maybe that's not with LA because he'll have to ostensibly go to whichever team drafts Bronny in that season. That could be like a good practice, though I actually don't think he'd be able to do it for more than one season. So that's why I think it's unlikely. I think old habits do die hard in some cases, and he'd eventually kind of try and take control of the team, right? And they're more of a democratic. I think the Grizzlies and the Pels are more of like a democratic roster. I'd see it more for KD because, again, like I said earlier, I think he just wants to show up, do the thing he's incredible at, you know, and then go on Twitter and call it a day. And he does have, he can do that more at it, like in a complete environment, like a complete roster that just needs him to come in and like get some shots off.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing is it really depends on the guy because some star players just never want to adapt to that sort of, you know, more secondary role later in their careers. Most guys can't because it's just like a thing for that they can't reconcile in their brains after being the best player alive on their teams for, you know, 30 years or whatever it's been. But like when you do get that sort of role player evolution for a guy later in his career, it becomes so, so satisfying. And I feel like KD would be fucking great at it, too. And it's not to say he'd be like a role player like he's Jeff Green, like he's an excellent, excellent second or third option on a very good team that sort of cedes most control to the whatever heliocentric star there is. But that's my dream here. The new super teams is just old guys teaming up in their deep 30s to go and win titles as secondary guys. That would be the dream. One last thing I wanted to hit on here, Katie, is sort of the guys caught in the crossfire when super teams go awry. You know, we've seen it with the Nets, like lots of sort of ballast over the last couple of years, guys get thrown overboard just before the playoffs. We've seen guys get cut and sort of, you know, cycled through sort of trying to find that right mix around the set of stars that you have. The Lakers, of course, trade away all the guys who they want a title with to bring in a bunch of minimum guys around Russell Westbrook. That didn't work. And those guys certainly, for the most part, won't be back on the team next year. Do you feel for the plight of these guys? Like, do you have any like sort of sympathy for these guys who kind of get caught up in the crossfire when things go wrong with super teams, when it's really not their fault? They just are kind of there and party to it. Maybe there is some blame because they're not the right role players or whatever, but I always feel bad for like the guys who, you know, like Andre Drummond, for example. I don't know what happens for him next after this year. I don't know what happens to Nick Claxton after he kind of famously goes 1 of 11 in game 4 from the line and, you know, goes into an offseason where he's a free agent. Is he going to be brought back by the Nets? Is he sent somewhere else? Does he go sign somewhere else? Does the sort of high spectacle of what he did for the Nets affect his livelihood going forward? Like, I always feel like the guys on these super teams, when it goes well, they're like folk heroes forever. But when it goes poorly, they end up kind of getting cycled through the churn of the NBA. And that kind of bums me out.
I think I feel it for it more for old like players who have less career in front of them, probably, than I do for younger players. I think Nick Claxton, you got to keep in mind, he's in his third year in the NBA. Like, there's absolutely no staying power to, like, if he had a bad couple of games or if he had a really bad series. Every single person on the Nets, including, you know, guys named Kevin Durant, had bad series. So you got to take that, you know, you got to take that in context. But no, I don't really, I think, I feel for them. I think it must suck, but I think that the younger guys, like, you know, Nick Claxton, Joe Harris, they're, I mean, and Joe Harris not that young anymore, but whatever. Like, I just think that they're still going to be fantastic players somewhere else if they choose to leave. Maybe even more so because they'll get a little bit more sunlight, right? Like, they're going to maybe get some more substantial roles on teams that can find a fit for them. But, like, that's always a bummer. That's not just a bummer on teams that superstars eclipse players. That's a bummer on teams that don't necessarily even have plans, right? Like, you look at the Kings, even like the Magic to a degree, the Blazers this season, like a lot of guys you could say have like, quote, wasted a year of their already short NBA seasons in places where there's no plan for their development or, you know, the next step in their career. So I don't think it can't just like fall on stars, you know, that like eclipsing sensation. But I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just feeling more positive than you.
That's fair. And look, it runs both ways too, right? Because when you're part of a super team like that, you're part of a highly, you know, talked about team, like there is a certain sort of cachet that comes with it as well. And you can be like Kyle Kuzma, who maybe sort of, and like he was really good this season with the Lakers. I think it was always kind of, you know, just being good in the periphery of LeBron James sort of gives you the reputation that's going to sort of carry you through, maybe give you a couple extra years of making money in your NBA career. So it does run both ways. But I do always feel like when these things kind of flame out, you know that like 80% of the sort of back end roster guys are going to be churned over and we don't really know where they're going to end up. And I do think I agree with you, though, as well, that older guys sort of hoping to hang on, like LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin, like, do we see them play anywhere again after this season? I don't know. And that is kind of sad, but they weren't able to really contribute to this team. And like, that's going to affect them as they look for work next season, I'm sure, if they even want it. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're cool to just go hang out. And maybe Blake wants to just kind of dive into stand-up comedy. He'll have lots of material to work through in his next hour from this season, I'm sure. Katie, with that, we're going to pivot and go to the segment we're trying out this week. This week, we are doing a segment built off of a piece that you wrote for Up Rocks, and we are going to examine that and the concept of guys coming up in just 1 second here on UB. All right, we have reached the segment we're trying out this week. And this week, Katie, you are the inspiration for this entire segment. You wrote a piece over at Dime Up Rocks titled The Official NBA Playoff Guide to Guys. Before we dive into the segment we've concocted for today, which is called Guy, or Gee, we should probably give some context to the folks out there. Katie, what inspired this piece from you? And I guess maybe give a little bit of context for the listeners out there who are unfamiliar with the concept of guys, what exactly the guy spectrum is, where the what the different sort of categories of guy are. I don't know if it's a spectrum, if it's a circle, if it's a bucket, who knows? But give the good people out there some context for this segment here before we dive on in.
I just was really taken by Draymond Green's, I think it was post game 3 comment, where he just said that some guys you think are guys are not guys, because it's so specific to the dumb world of sports that, you know, you knew what he meant. But there's a lot of people who, if they just read that, like I was thinking, like, what if someone who's just learned, like, what if someone's on like a Duolingo app trying to learn English, and that's the sentence, and they're like, what the fuck is this? Like, what is this even? Like, what are the tenses? What does this even mean? How can someone be not the same three words? You know, like, I think, like, the out-of-contextness of it, I really enjoyed a lot, but I wanted to extrapolate on it in that sense and treat it as, like, almost like a scientific inquiry, of course. So that's what I did.
Yeah. So essentially, there are three categories of guys. There are guys, lowercase all the way through, who are, you know, I think probably the great majority of NBA players. Would that be fair to say, Katie?
Yeah. And because I do want to say, like, a lowercase guy, it's not like you're just like a guy out on the street walking around. I think in the context of basketball, the understanding is you're still good enough to be in the NBA.
Yeah, like there's no shame in being a lowercase guy. You're an NBA player, and that is a bloody accomplishment on its own. Then you move up and you have a capital G guys. The UYS notably are all lowercase. But a capital G guys, these are guys I think sort of Draymond Green is trying to draw the line of delineation between. Is that correct?
Sorry, who?
Like Draymond Green is referring, like when you're saying like these guys, like he's talking about there's the lowercase guys and there's the uppercase guys. And that is sort of the line that he's sort of establishing with his quote, correct?
Well, he didn't say uppercase guys. I said uppercase guys.
No, he did not.
Yeah, I should clarify that. He just said guys three times. and I guess a little bit of emphasis on one of them. But yeah, an uppercase capital, like a capital G guy, rather, is like someone who, in the context of the playoffs, shows up and does a little bit of everything, I think, and like really digs in. By virtue of that, I don't think that uppercase G guys are stars. I think there's then another category of all caps guys who is like the guy, which is like Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like this type of like generational player, as we call them. And then you have Guy as someone who could be a hockey player.
Yes, the Guys are maybe like, okay, look for a bit of a career change here. Your skills, your guyness is not conducive to NBA basketball, but perhaps it could be at home playing for the Montreal Canadiens or something like that. So yeah, what we're going to do here, Katie, in this game we're calling Guy or Guy, we are going to run through some NBA playoff teams and their rosters and determine whether some select players from their teams are in fact guys, or geese. Let's begin, Katie, in the Western Conference, shall we? We have the Phoenix Suns, your number one seed, battling it out with the New Orleans Pelicans right now. This is a team rich with, you know, I think they're heavy on the capital G guys, but and maybe that's kind of why they're so good. But let's start here. Let's begin with DeAndre Ayton, shall we? DeAndre Ayton is very good. He's had a bit of a tricky series with Jonas Valanciunas kind of inhaling him as though he's Kirby on half these possessions. But where are you at with DeAndre Ayton and his guydom?
Yeah, I think DeAndre Ayton is a capital G guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think what we've seen in the last couple of years from him is pretty clear. He's not bothered by the moment. He's there to do the dirty work. He's going to set hard-ass screens for his very skilled guards. I think that's a pretty easy one. The guy he's often screening for is Chris Paul, Katie. This is an interesting one. Where do you think he slots in? Is he a lowercase, uppercase, all caps guy, or perhaps is he a gi?
I think in past seasons before he got to the Suns, Chris Paul was a lowercase guy because he didn't really like to do a little bit of everything. He actually was kind of stubbornly wanted to be treated as a star. I think it's now known like, yeah, he is a star. But I think with the Suns, he has kind of uniquely... Some of this is because he was injured and he had to sort of watch and like figure out what he could do from the sidelines. And I think, you know, contribute in different ways. But I think now he is, I think the uppercase guyness of a lot of his teammates has rubbed off on him.
Yeah, I think that's well put. Is there, I mean, I know the capital, like the all caps guy is a very rarefied air. But, you know, there are some, and you could make the arguments that he is the greatest point guard to ever play the game of basketball. Is he at all a contender to be an all caps guy, or is he just sub all caps to you?
It depends. It's like very, he has to win a title, I would say. Like that sure. Does seem to be a qualification. I can't think of any all caps guys who haven't won one or multiple championships.
Right. So, I mean, big stakes for Chris Paul in this year's postseason. You know, he's got the title, of course, so he wants to win the championship. But more importantly, he needs to, you know, capitalize that UI in the guy to really sort of cement his career legacy. And then let's just, I mean, Devin Booker, you know, a little early in his career, I think probably to have a full view here. But he has, you know, elevated his defensive profile in recent years. He's a good playmaker. He's obviously a big bucket maker. He's been quite clutch. He's kind of, I think, abandoned the very obvious lowercase guy status that he probably had in the early days of his son's career. But Katie, I ask you, has Devin Booker ascended to capital G guy yet?
Yeah.
I think that's fair. He's very good, and they really need him back in that series against the Pelicans. It's getting freaky. With that, let's take a look at the Pelicans, shall we, Katie? The New Orleans Pelicans made their way into the postseason with a pretty nice second half after a 1-12 start to the season. They don't have Zion Williamson, but they do have a lot of dudes playing for them right now. Lots of fellas, but are they guys? Let's start with CJ McCollum, the trade deadline acquisition for the Pelicans, sort of immersing himself in a new team, acclimatizing to not playing next to Damian Lillard for the first time in 10 years. He's working off of Brandon Ingram quite nicely. He's got Herb Jones flying around protecting him defensively in a way no wing has ever defended him next to him in the past. Where is CJ McCollum here in the categorization of guys?
With the Pelicans, he's certainly a capital G guy by out of necessity. And I think probably in his last few years, well, he always actually had to do this with Dame in Portland. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you got him capital G guy. All right.
Capital G guy.
Well, let's go to a much larger man who I just mentioned in the matchup with DeAndre Ayton. Jonas Valanciunas, like this guy, he feels like a full-on capital G guy based on his recent track record. He is the king of the NBA play-in game, has averaged like, I don't know, what, fucking 23 and 18 in the play-in, and he's won every one he's played in, and he is crushing it for the Pelicans in this series as well. Is he a very clear capital G guy to you, Katie?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Quite a rise, because back in the day with the Raptors, I don't think you could have said that. You know, the defensive issues, getting played off the floor, that type of stuff. That's not a thing anymore. He's just the power of that really, really thick hair goo he's using has really helped him escalate or elevate himself, I think. Let's go to a different team, also in the Western Conference. Let's go with the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that is... I mean, you could just call them the Memphis Grizzlies or something like that. They feel like they're loaded with guys. However, there have been some ups and downs for them in this series. You know, Ja Morant figures like he's got probably all caps guy potential down the line sometime. Obviously, very, very early in his career for that, I would say. You know, I mean, let's start with Ja. Has he even got that capital G yet, Katie?
Yeah. I think kind of fair. A rare star who is a guy. Most stars aren't, because they don't actually like do a little bit of everything.
Right. You know, I think a lot of these are pretty obvious. Like Dylan Brooks feels like a capital G guy. Desmond Bane feels like a capital G guy. Brandon Clark has been an absolute capital G guy, I think, so far in this series. But the interesting one here is Jaren Jackson Jr., Katie, who had a wonderful season, you know, was in the defensive player of the year conversation for a little bit, might make all defense, but has been pretty rough in this series. He fouled out in 22 minutes and then fouled out in 17 minutes in back-to-back games, and has just kind of been rough on both ends of the floor for the Grizzlies against the Timberwolves, kind of getting run over by Karl-Anthony Towns, who I think a lot of folks would say is sort of the embodiment of a lowercase guy. I don't think that's fair, but I think that's sort of the book that's out on him. Jaren Jackson Jr., Katie, is he really struggling with lowercase guydom right now, or do you think he's got a capital G in his near future?
I've got to reframe it. Like, you're not struggling if you're just a regular guy, like a lowercase G guy.
That's fair. I'm being too unfair in the classification here. We have to go back and realize, yes, they're all good players here.
But I don't think he's a capital G guy yet.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, that does have the potential to be someday. Let's go to the Utah Jazz, Katie. The Utah Jazz, by the time you listen to this, depending if you listen to this Thursday or Friday, might be gone and out of the postseason and have gone marched towards their funeral already. It seems pretty dire down there. It doesn't seem like anyone feels good about coming back to Utah for Game 6 tonight against the Mavericks. Is there a guy, capital G, to be found on this roster at all, Katie? Like Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, we'll get to them in a second. I don't think they classify as capital Gs right now. Is there any sort of capital G dudes, hopefully, not dudes, sorry, capital G guys, there to sort of save the Jazz season? Like, where are you at with the Jazz right now in their collection of guys, you know, capitals or otherwise?
Well, and I should clarify, like, you don't have to be, though Draymond meant it in the context of the playoffs specifically, I kind of expanded it. So I think Rudy Gay, I would consider a capital G guy, which is, you know, interesting because there are times in his career when I certainly did not. I think Mike Conley is a capital G guy. I'd even say Bojan Bogdanovic is a capital G guy. But yeah, I guess they're otherwise a bit thin on them.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Mitchell and Gobert kind of have worked themselves into Gi territory, I would argue. Like, just the vibes are as toxic as most hockey locker rooms, I gather, are. Like, the sort of lack of wanting to do all the things, you know what I mean? Like, Mitchell doesn't care about playing defense. He's just letting dudes walk by him like he's a goddamn turnstile. You've got Gobert, just, you know, he doesn't want to post up. He, you know, he'll play great defense and all of that, but where's his offensive contribution coming from? Am I being unfair to Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert by classifying both in the Gi category? And what does that say about the overall hopes of the Jazz of saving this thing, if in fact Mitchell and Gobert, their two best players, are Gis?
I mean, that's Gi is like your contextualization. So I think you got to own that if you're deciding, you know what I mean? Like, that's more of your wheelhouse, certainly not mine. So sure. I'll agree with you.
Okay. I think, look, I don't want to be too disparaging with the framing of Gi. There have been plenty of great Gis. Gi LaFleur, rest in peace, one of the greatest Gis of all time. But I think it's more sort of a maybe this is not your true vocation. Maybe there's something else waiting for you that's just a little less, like, low stress and low pressure for you. More team guys to sort of, like, the thing with hockey is that a star doesn't necessarily have to do it all, right? It's not like the NBA where you have to sort of, you know, be the sort of pillar that leads the way. Whereas in the NHL, like, a star can be like a fine player. They play like 20 minutes a game out of 60. It's less high stakes, less high stress. You can more count on your teammates to support you. And I think maybe Mitchell and Gobert would be more suited to that sort of team environment as opposed to having to be the bellwethers for an entire franchise. Let's move it over to the Eastern Conference, Katie, and pick a couple teams over here. We should go with the Philadelphia 76ers first, I think. They, of course, staring down the barrel of blowing things up real bad if they lose this series to the Raptors. They won't blow the team up. They can't really do that. But, like, their psyche certainly will be, I think. Pick a player, Katie. I'll let you sort of run the table on this one. Is there someone who stands out to you on this roster who's a capital G guy that, you know, the Sixers can throw their belief behind here? Where are you at with the Sixers?
Yeah, I think Tobias Harris is a capital G guy. I think Danny Green certainly has been a capital G guy in the past. I think he still is. Mm-hmm. I had Tyrese Maxey as an emerging guy, capital G guy, on the list in the story. So yeah, they do have some.
Yeah. I think, again, it's a problem that you didn't mention any of their best players, I suppose. Maybe I'm being too rigid in this.
Well, but yeah, not really, because I had said before, stars aren't usually capital G guys. Embiid comes close, but Embiid's like finger is like falling off.
Does he have an all, like, obviously you need to win a title to be an all caps guy in your sort of evaluation here, Katie? Do you think he has that in him? Do you think Joel Embiid 10 years from now we have the potential to be looking at him as an all caps guy, or do you think it's a little too rich of an ambition for him?
No, I think he definitely could be, but, you know, it's time's got to tell. I mean, and he needs a title.
Yeah, and needs to not blow a 3-1 lead or 3-0 lead, probably. I will say for sure, Matisse Thybulle, extreme Gi energy. It sounds like his views on vaccines probably resemble a lot of NHL players, first of all. And also, his sort of mix of not being able to play offense and being pretty good at defense really suits what the NHL loves in like a low lineup player, like your fourth line winger. The whole thing about the NHL is that they really eschew offense in favor of defense. In fact, it's like deemed to be bad if offense is kind of the way that you go about winning your games. You know, that you'll hear the constant refrain after like an 8-6 Maple Leafs game. It's like, well, they're never going to win if they give up six goals every game, instead of, wow, they scored eight goals in that game. That's amazing. I feel like Thibault's whole thing of no offense, all defense, and sort of plucky energy that doesn't really actually move the needle all that much feels extremely at home on the third line left wing of the Boston Bruins. Let's go to some other teams in the Eastern Conference.
We got to do a little bit of a lightning round, so let's
hammer through. All right, let's just go a couple teams that are still kicking. The Boston Celtics, what's their guy situation, Katie? Do they have a capital G guy? Do they have all lowercase guys? Are they all capital G guys? What do you got on the Celtics?
They do have a lot of capital G guys, as we kind of hinted at earlier. I think Robert Williams, capital G guy. I think Marcus Smart is a capital G guy. I think Tatum, it's tough because he's a star. But he's, I think, like, he's almost there. He could be there soon, too. So could Jaylen Brown.
Tatum did guard Kevin Durant wonderfully for an entire series. Like, he's doing it all. Like, he's not just passing off defensive responsibilities to other. I think to Jason Tatum is a capital G guy, as much as it disappoints me to say that. Let me ask you this, Katie. Is there any current in the NBA playoffs as it stands right now? So KD's out, LeBron's didn't even make it, and I think those are the guys you'd probably classify as all caps guys, most likely, from the most recent NBA era. Is there a still alive player in the Eastern or Western Conference playoffs that you would classify as an all caps guy right now?
You said still alive?
You know what I mean. Still playing basketball for their basketball team.
Yeah, LeBron James.
No. I said not him, because he's not playing right now in the playoffs.
Playoffs. I mean, Steph Curry is pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. Is Giannis there with one title?
Not yet, but he's certainly he's on the way. Certainly, like, very, very, very close.
And my last one for you, Luka Doncic, Katie. I think a person that, unbelievably talented at basketball. I think people have their gripes about him just in his sort of aesthetic as a player, his whininess, etc. Where does Luka Doncic slot in for you? Our last one here in the rapid fire round.
Luka is not a capital G guy because he doesn't do a lot. I mean, he does a lot. He's very talented, but he doesn't really want to go beyond that. And I don't think he feels like he needs to.
Yeah. He does the one thing very, very well. But if not for capital G guys like Dorian Finney-Smith around him, it might get tricky. Either way, Katie, that has been Guy or Gee. We are going to move on to the posters of the week, the way we round out every one of our episodes, the best in NBA social media from the last 7 days. I'm actually going to go different than the one I had. I'm going to go on the whoever tweeted it out, whoever's the reporter covering the Denver Nuggets Golden State Warriors series. Apologies, I don't have the exact person who transcribed it here, but my favorite post of the week is the transcription of Nikola Jokic talking about Draymond Green and, like, the joy of playing against him in a playoff series on the heels of losing the playoff series, just talking about how he has shut down better offensive players than him in the past, and it was a joy to go against him. It's just such a fun little chess match. Really, really great. And I like it when real recognize real in the NBA, Katie. So that is my poster of the week. Thank you to all of those intrepid Nuggets reporters who transcribed that piece, and thank you for sharing it around. And also thanks to Dave Dufour, who retweeted it and said, that's the good shit. So that's my poster of the week. It's a collective poster of the week. Katie, who's your poster of the week?
I'm going to change mine too, just to keep it fresh. Mine would be, I saw that Klay Thompson arrived for game 5 by bike. He bicycled to the arena and he comes down the parking garage like ramp, like hands free.
I got to tell you, Katie, I'm a bike person. I am terrified of going hands-free. It's like I have a phobia of doing it. I don't like to mess with it. So I'm glad Clay is comfortable enough with his balance to toy around with going hands-free. It's just not something I really dabble in as a bike rider. We're going to wrap it there, Katie. Thank you so much for hanging out and recording this again with me, even though it was entirely my own technology's fault that the first one went away. It's lovely. It's nice to get a chance to talk to you twice in 2 days, Katie. It's the best. Anything you have to promote for the good people out there?
I will promote the Guy's Story, the official guide to guys. That's on Dime.
Yes.
I also wrote a feature about Luke Bonner and Luke Bonner's company Power Forward. They're doing... they've done and are continuing to do, I should say, a pivot to the women's game for their startup in really interesting and meaningful ways. So that's also on Dime. And you can listen to the Basketball Feelings podcast, and you can also read Basketball Feelings, where I'm probably going to do Exits, the series I did last year when I wrote about every team that was eliminated from the playoffs. That's at basketballfeelings.com.
Outstanding. Everyone go subscribe to Basketball Feelings. It's the very, very best, I'm telling you. You can find me at Woodley Sean on Twitter. You can subscribe to the podcast Locked On Raptors, which is my daily Raptors podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube as well. I'll have a live show coming on at you after the game on Thursday with the Raptors taking on the Sixers for game number 6. So you can set your clock to that and get a subscribe and get a reminder when that goes live. You can find my blogs at raptorshq.com, and you can find this podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/abasketball2h's. Please go and support the show over there. It's much appreciated when you take the time to do that, and obviously it's much appreciated when you give us money to support the show. It's very, very nice of you, and we're very, very thankful for your support and telling friends about it, and hopefully rallying the troops to get more people on the Patreon page. We got a Patreon episode coming for you on Monday as well, a little later than usual, but it's going to be a good one, so it'll be worth the wait. And with that, we will let you go. We'll talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball. Bye-bye. We'll